minutes yet until we just get
Good afternoon, everyone.
Hi, Deborah.
Can you hear me?
I'm good. Okay, great.
Can you hear me?
That's good.
Is that bad? Okay. All right. Well, first off, I think I have to qualify. So my name is Deborah. I'm a recovered food addict and recovered compulsive overeater. I've been in OA since November 2014. I preference saying that my weight loss is a little probably unusual. The highest weight was 300 pounds. My total weight loss was 150 pounds, and no, I did not do that since November 2014. So I want to qualify by saying that I do have a sponsor, and I am willing to sponsor also. My journey started as far as weight loss, it started in 2008, okay? And I'm really, really happy to be able to say that March marks my 5-year anniversary with having 100 plus pounds off my body. So I'm very grateful for that. And when I thought about what I would need to say today, and really prayed about what I need to say today, the phrase, "I can win," came to my mind. And that was the big lesson that I learned and continue to learn, that I can win. And all of us in here are winning. OA provides a way to win. And I'm very grateful for that, because I didn't always feel like a winner. And this song we just sang, I remember a time when I could not say honestly that I love myself. It really brought back a flood of memories. So I want to start by telling you a little bit about myself. This is my story, and I call it the victory over weight, because I didn't overcome being obese. I overcame a lot of weights, emotional weights, financial weights, a lot of struggles. So I call it a victory over weight. But I'm gonna start with my childhood. And best way I could describe my childhood was, I'm traumatized in my childhood. And I've heard people say that, you know, you're a compulsive overeater. It has nothing to do with what's happened to you. That was just always inside of you. So I guess my childhood sparked that for me. By the time I was 5 years old, I had been sexually molested by 3 different people. A female babysitter, a male first cousin, and a male friend of the family. And I was told by my mom that I didn't need to go to counseling or anything like that. I told my mom what happened to me. And that was coupled with, you know, my mom was a single parent. Me and my sister had different biological fathers. My biological father wasn't in my life because he didn't want to claim me because I wasn't a boy. So I just had all these things like stacked up against me emotionally. And I ate. My family in general are obese people. So they socialize their children with food. Like, all my cousins were overweight. It was just, everybody was big. So there was no shame in being overweight in my family to a certain extent. But I was teased a lot as a child. I was bullied a lot as a child because of my overweight status. Looking back, I look at pictures. I was not a fat infant. I was not a fat toddler. I didn't have any weight issues until I was 5. And by the time I was 12, I was over 200 pounds. By the time I left high school, I was 300 pounds. So my childhood really, like I said, best way I could describe it was I was traumatized. But you know, there was good there too. But I think that set me up for a lifetime of struggling in my head about who I am and my significance and what I could bring to the table. I'm gonna jump a little forward. Left home, went to college, and that was a big deal because I was the first child in my family to go to college. And a lot of my peers didn't think I was gonna go to college. I was just, the fat girl, underachiever, or what have you. It's interesting. I did get into a really good university, and I went, and my addictive food behaviors really overtook me when I was in college. I really started hearing voices say things like, "Let's do damage," and I would literally go in and pick up like 4 different things and just like go to town. It was nothing for me to order, a small one of these, a dozen of this, a pint of that, and wash it down with a large something. And go to my dorm room, and that's what I was doing. And I was doing damage. I was doing damage to myself. And because I didn't have that self-love, and I didn't have that self-respect for me. And I labeled myself as a foodie, And this went on for college life. I fully took advantage of nobody being around. So I isolated, to the point I had my own dorm room. I had gotten around the system and had my own room. I didn't really get along or play well with others either. So that probably helped me have my own dorm room. So. But yeah, that "let's do damage" stayed with me for a while. And that attitude about being a foodie, was spurred on with certain networks that were all centered around food, And which also affected how I spent my money. It was nothing for me to go into a restaurant and drop $30 to $50 in a restaurant for myself, And I didn't necessarily junk food. I really high-end, Morton Steakhouse. I really treated myself well, when it came to that. But I was really sad, and I was socially just lonely. I didn't really interact with anything other than food. And that really wasn't the life I wanted. And I realized in college, around about age 20, it was my freshman spring semester, that I was not living. I earnestly was not living. And this would be the breach into my first spiritual transformation. I call this section spirit-led. So my freshman spring semester, I realized that I was really sick. There was something wrong with me. And I had really no best friends. I had never had a boyfriend at that point. I was in the room, I was binging. I'm supposed to be having the time of my life. I was absolutely miserable. Absolutely miserable. And I prayed out loud. And I told God, I said, "I need a life. Because I'm not living. I'm 19, born in 20. I'm 20 years old. I'm not living. I need a life." And here I was at the Catholic University in New Jersey. This is sick and crazy. The spiritually was not at all there. And I knew something was wrong with me. And I was labeling myself as a Catholic at the time. It was supposed to be my spirituality, Catholicism. And I had tried, as a kid, I was raised Nation of Islam Muslim. And then I converted to Catholicism because I was convinced of the Trinity. So I had been looking for God, but all those religions did not give me God, did not give me a relationship, did not give me any peace of mind. So subsequently, I would go into the chapel and do confession, and with no exaggeration, I would go up to the door and I could not turn the knob. I could not get myself to get in that door. 3 times this happened to me. And all the while my prayer was, I need life. Like, I need life. I'm not living, I'm living. I'm hearing voices. I mean, to the point I actually asked my dad, I said, you ever hear voices? Because I like to hear voices. Like, damn, like, it was crazy. Like, I could literally hear voices. At one point, I thought I was going to be schizophrenic because I read it and it happens in your 20s. But anyway, that wasn't the case. It was this crazy, addictive, destructive mind. And anyway, May 2nd, 1993, 2 days after my 20th birthday, I did find my salvation. I did have this spiritual awakening, and my life changed drastically, drastically. I finally found joy. It was like a switch just turned on, and I found joy, I found hope, and I started to accept that I needed to let God love me. To really let God love me. And that started my climb. Like I said, I've always been victory over weight. Well, I had mountains to climb. And this was the first mountain. So that acceptance happened. And again, all I know is I prayed. I need life. I need life. So the physical transformation started December 2008. So I had this awesome idea that I would go to New York and have a New York Christmas, and I would skate at Rockefeller. I've never ice skated in my life. And at the time, I was not 300 pounds, I was 278. But I'm ice skating. In my mind, I'm ice skating, therefore I'm making a reservation and I'm ice skating. So, like I said, I had my first spiritual experience May 2nd, 1993. So here we are, 2008. And I ice skated and it was crazy because they said, oh, we don't have a reservation. I'm like, I'm from Atlantic City. I certainly made a reservation. And they're like, okay, well, go try it. And then we'll find you your, because I paid for a lesson, because I don't mind skating. So we'll go find a skating coach or whatever for the second. So I get like 2 hours. I get an hour free at Rockefeller. Hey, I love a deal, so yeah, I'll try it. So I go out there and, I hug the wall and scream a lot and wobble and, people were very endearing and whatever. I skated for an hour. And then I skated for another hour with the trainer person. I only fell once with a trainer person. And after that experience, of course I went to a Juju restaurant that I had already picked out. Because Rachel Ray said it was all right, so I went. But anyway, what I realized all of a sudden, it hit me. You just skated for 2 hours, you're not sore, and in fact you're like exhilarated. What have you been doing all this time? You're a freaking athlete. Like, what are you doing with your mind? And it hit me that although I had had this spiritual experience at 20, I found my salvation, I was not living authentically. I didn't even know what I looked like. So I'm like, I would just like to know what I look like before I die. That would be good. And then two, if I actually started doing what I say I believe when it comes to my body, the way I do with my spiritual life, I think that I can actually be worshiping God with this body. So I became convinced that this body was an act of worship, not just my mind and my mouth. And that I had been fooling myself. I wasn't as spiritual as I thought I was. And so, how do you start? Well, my higher power had told me a long time ago that he was going to use people, places, and things to get me to the image that he has for me. And he told me that after I flipped out having to deal with somebody I didn't want to deal with. I was like, why do you keep putting difficult people in my life? Like, seriously. And he's like, I'm going to use people, places, and things to straighten you out. And I remember him saying that. So my prayer after my New York Christmas was bring people, places, and things into my life to get me where I needed it. And the struggle continued. The struggle continued. Things that I wouldn't ever want anybody touching, God touched. Things like my first name. Deborah is not my birth name. God said, I'm changing your name. I'm calling you out as a Deborah. I'm like, really? And for 5 years, we tangled back and forth. And for 5 years, I remained obese, I remained miserable, and I remained broke. Like, I was working at Wawa with a master's degree. That kind of broke. But when I yielded and allowed him to change my name, I got a career. Like, I went from $16,000 to $42,000 in a matter of 3 months. So that needed to happen. I needed to completely disconnect from that person I was. And I'm still learning why that had to happen. But I'm grateful, you know. And then the career that I wound up getting was not one that I was trained for, nor did I ever imagine myself doing. I wound up teaching elementary school. All my degrees are in business. My bachelor's and my master's, I would have never chose me to work with a kindergartner. But I taught kindergarten for 3 years, first grade for 7 years. I'm teaching third grade now. I would have never picked that name nor that career. But when you allow your higher power to direct your path, that's what you get. So, OA. My first experience with OA, out of desperation, I was seeking and somehow came across Opiates Anonymous. At the time, I was 29, going on 30, or just turned 30. And I honestly, outside of my higher power directing me that way, I don't remember anybody telling me about it, but I sought it out. And I wound up going to a meeting that was a sect of OA called HOW. So these people sat around and talked, and they said they didn't eat sugar, but yet they went to the diner across the street and they ate stuff, and they put ketchup on stuff. And I don't know a lot at the time about food, but I know ketchup got sugar in it. But anyway, I was like, at the time, I was kind of like, what? I definitely had my disease mind on because I was judging them left and right. I was like, I don't know what these people talking about, but I'll try it. And so I did try it. And I think I stayed for 4 months. And I said, well, they say they don't eat sugar, I'm not going to eat sugar. They say they don't eat flour, I'm not going to eat flour. And I tried it. And what happened, my breathing cleared up, and I didn't have to clear my throat every morning, and all that mucus left, so I was happy about that. And surprisingly, I lost 40 pounds. So I was like, okay, the flour, probably, I'll let that go, that's a good thing. The sugar, that's what, I don't know about that. So, but anyway, I didn't stay because, like I said, I had my judgment hat on, and they kept saying higher power. And I'm like, what's wrong with naming them? Like, I know what my higher power is. Like, what's the deal? Like, I had about, you know, whatever thing I could throw out there as to why I wasn't staying, I didn't stay. And I didn't read the big book, and I didn't have a sponsor. This is in retrospect, but nobody explained it to me in that group anyway. So I learned that coming back. So anyway, I was about 30. And we fast forward. Like I said to someone earlier, my story is a little bit different because I left, but God didn't leave me. My higher power didn't abandon me. He just continued to work on me. And I went on after that to have to, you know, submit, yield, do all kinds of amends, write letters, stuff that the OA group that I was in for the 4 months, I didn't even learn about that stuff. But God had me do that stuff. I had a food plan, I weigh and measure my food. I've been doing this since 2009, doing it like that. And OA principles, I'm like living, I don't even know what I was like doing stuff, you know. But I came in November 2014 because I got to a point, I realized, yeah, you've had, you kept off at that time 120 pounds for 3 years, but the thing is, you're still sick in the head. And the light bulb moment for me was, I was at work and I didn't have enough food. I had packed enough food that day, and I went in the refrigerator and I stole somebody's Greek yogurt. And I was so mortified at myself. Nobody wants to go like this. But it's like, what is wrong with you? You know, like I just left, went home, got food, came back. I only lived like 7 miles from my job. It's not like a big deal. But instead I stole the food. And that stealing, that's a sin of mine. And I went to the supermarket, bought the same exact brand, same flavor to replace it. Because I felt so bad. And in the midst of all that going on, I just heard my higher power say, OA. So here I was back. Now I'm on the computer looking at OA, like, okay, where's the meeting? This, that, and the other. So I ran to the meeting. And I honestly know that, you know, you could look a certain way, you could have certain things set up in your life, but if your mind, when it comes to this disease, is a constant work, period. I don't care. There is no getting there. There is no mountaintop experience, I'm done situation. I need a way. I need a way. And I'm very grateful to be here. So the principles that like I'm currently working on, I'm on step 11. Let me let y'all know I'm on step 11. So these steps made a huge difference in my experience with OA. Like huge. And I don't think I would have been able to survive doing the steps the first time at 30. So these steps will slay you twice, okay? But they will get you where you need to go. And right now, step 8, 9, and 10 really, really speak to me and what I'm getting out of it. Step 8, make a list of people who are harmed and become willing to make amends to them. And 9, we all know, make direct amends whenever possible without doing injury. And 10, continue to take personal inventory when we're wrong and properly admit it. What I'm getting out of it, step 8, love, responsibility, forgiveness, and acceptance. Those are my responsibilities. Not judging, criticizing, and fault finding. The direct amends, it takes a lot of courage to do that. And, but it brings so much peace and serenity and generosity and willingness. This being willing has been a huge thing for me. Because, like I said, these steps, at first glance, why would I want to list all my personality defects? But, you know, being willing to do that has brought me a tremendous amount of peace and serenity. And when I first was looking for a sponsor, I was just looking for a sponsor to work the steps. Because I already had my food down, as far as I was concerned. I'm good. By the time I came back, I had already lost 130 pounds. You know, so like, my food's good. But she's like, oh, I'm just submitting anyway. There's that willingness thing. Okay, I'll submit the food too. I wasn't looking forward to it. I wasn't looking to do that. But like I said, what I've learned is I have a certain personality set because I have this disease. And sometimes we think we know everything. And there is no mountaintop experience. So I submit my food to, and I work the steps with my sponsor. Away, basically, is like my third spiritual transformation. And I'm sure there's more to come. You know, I feel like a cat with nine lives with this thing. But what I do realize is that, you know, the struggle is real, and it's not going anywhere. I need OA desperately, and I'm here for the rest of my life. And I'm very grateful for everything I've gotten from OA. And I have no idea what time it is, because I don't have a watch on or where my time is. Am I good with the time?
You don't
want
time yet.
I do?
You do.
Okay, great. Okay. All right. But I'm really, really awestruck at how everybody in the room is so different from one another, just on appearance state. You know, you can't say, oh, this person is an OA, or a lot of people, if you were walking past me, I wouldn't know, you know? And I thought about that today as I was sitting in the room. I'm like, they look perfectly fine, you know what I'm saying? But we all have battles. We all have battles, we all have weights that we have to overcome. And the steps help me not just overcome those things, but actually take ownership of them and take responsibility. And I think for a long time, I was putting my happiness and my health on hold because I didn't want to take responsibility that I was the only person that was going to make any difference in my life on any level. And that can be scary, especially when you can't even say you love yourself, which was one of my issues. If you don't think you're capable, and come to find out you're the only one who can make the difference, that's pretty scary, you know? That's pretty scary. But that's where I found myself. And I recently had a conversation with my sponsor, and I told her, I said, you know, I have some heavy self-control. And she said, you talk like somebody who's not been in OA. She said, no, you don't have any self-control. She said, that's why you have to give it over to God. You have to give it over to your higher power. And that's the case when it comes to our lives and responsibility. Like, the thing you think you can handle is the very thing you need to give over to your higher power, because he can certainly handle it. And throughout my journey, what I've found is God is absolutely greater, and God is absolutely the highest power. And the thing I can't stomach or stand or don't want to do, that's the very thing I need to give over to him and allow him to accomplish in my life. There's no way I could stand before you today without him. And there's no way I could have withstood all the things I had to do to relinquish that 150 pounds that I was carrying around. So I'm not very wrong with it, I'm sorry.
A time for sharing.
Okay, so I'm gonna open up the floor. 3 minutes.